starting a few minutes early. The Atlanta Braves were initially scheduled to be on during the local zone today. This is the local zone, by the way. I am Brooks Carter. We're starting about 5 minutes early. As I mentioned, the Braves were supposed to start their pregame coverage today right at 1:55, so we're coming on about 5 minutes early on the air today. So an hour and 5 minutes of local radio, and it is a Wednesday. And last week we had Jamal Williams in on Thursday, but moving forward, he will be in on Wednesday. How's it going, Jamal?
It's going pretty good. Who doesn't like 5 minutes of bonus coverage, right? There you go.
Yeah. It's Wednesday. We can get weird, man. We can get
keep
five
it weird Wednesday. I like it.
Yeah. So, but we've got a lot to get into on today's show. A lot of really good local high school sports going on in the area. And then we've got a couple of things to touch on from the collegiate front. And we're also going to take a tour a little bit around the SEC coming up next segment as all these spring games approach.
Ooh.
Obviously, we love our local high school athletics, but also part of the show is touching on the stuff regionally. And we know we've got the Orange and White spring game coming up, A-Day for Alabama, G-Day for Georgia. Auburn also calls theirs A-Day. It's always been kind of a back-and-forth thing over there. They both, the
Who's
rivalry.
Really has the A-Day title?
I don't know. They both call it that. I don't know who was calling it that first.
That's a good question. That's something that we might need to look up. I want to know who had A-Day first.
Yeah, that is a good question. I don't think I've ever actually bothered to even look that up.
Somebody's a copycat.
I've just boastfully said that my university called it that.
I want some dates to prove that. I'm going to look that up. We'll find that out for the next segment. How about that?
Yeah, sounds good. Well, sounds like a plan. As I mentioned, I am Brooks Carter, host of the show each weekday here from 2 to 3 on ESPN 105.1 The Zone, coming up on about 2 o'clock here. As I mentioned, we're jumping in about 5 minutes early with 1:55 was the original scheduled start time for the Atlanta Braves. So if you're looking for them, they're not on here. They're not on our sister station, EZ 106.9. The game has been canceled. And if you haven't kept up with why, there's actually a snowstorm going through through Colorado and like the Rocky Mountains and stuff right now. And it's pretty incredible considering that we're, 3 weeks into spring?
Yeah, it's like 80 degrees outside for us, and I'm just glad we don't have that snowstorm. Let's be serious.
Polar vortex right now in the middle of springtime out in Colorado. Did you see this as well? Speaking of the Braves, we'll get into our three big things coming up here in just a second. I don't know if you saw this. I saw the Fox Sports reporter that they have, and I can't remember what her name is.
Are you talking about what I think you're talking about?
They got
here?
Stuck in the elevator.
Yes. What are the chances that you get stuck in the elevator after a game? That video is great. I'm telling you, how does something like that happen? Okay. But I guess I've been stuck in an elevator before. It's not exactly the most pleasant time, but you definitely get to know the people around you if you're stuck in there for a little while.
So I'm gonna try and pull this video up real quick if it'll show up in my news feed. The thing about this video that's so amazing is it's kind of like no wonder they got stuck, because did you see how many players got out of the elevator? What's the weight limit? It looked like they just kept coming. It was like someone stomped on an anthill. I mean, it looked like 20 players came out of that elevator.
That was either a very big elevator or they by far packed that thing. And you got to keep in mind, these are professional athletes, so these aren't like 100-pound soaking wet guys. These are all guys that are easily pushing, 200 and are in shape, and they were stacked in there.
Yeah, but you can find that. It's on the Fox Sports Braves account, not the actual Braves Twitter account, but the Fox Sports Braves Twitter account from the Fox Sports South TV station. And it was pretty funny to see. But right up on 2 o'clock now, this is the Local Zone. You can follow the show on Twitter at LocalZone1051. I'm at Brooks A. Carter. Jamal is at J. Williams, WDEF. And just to quickly reintroduce you to Jamal, if you're not familiar with him, he is the morning anchor over at Channel 12 here in town, the CBS affiliate, WDEF. And he and I did a podcast for a little over 6 months on ESPN, Chattanooga.com. And he will be joining us every single Wednesday moving forward. So we're always going to have a lot of fun with him being in here in the studio. And we always do... something that we did on our podcast, we always do as a part of this show. We're going to do it as a part of this show moving forward, and we did it last week as well. Halftime happenings, and I got a little that's coming up around 2:30. Got a little bit of a surprise for Jamal there.
A surprise. Surprises are scary when it comes to halftime happenings.
Well, this one is not a surprise in any sort of like vulgar or disgusting way like I have thrown at you sometimes. But so that's coming up a little bit later. In segment two, as I mentioned, we're going to look around the SEC, looking at some of the top sports headlines surrounding each of the SEC teams going into their spring games coming up. And we're going to actually tell you when they all are, because they'll all be televised on the SEC network. But with that in mind, let's go ahead and get into today's three big things.
What's making the local and regional sports headlines? Find out now.
All right, we begin with some high school soccer.
Woo!
Last night, we had two teams that were defending state champions in two separate states, playing in a little bit of a border war here, in a little non-region action. Northwest Whitfield made the trip up here to Chattanooga to take on the Baylor School Red Raiders over there, and they took down Baylor 3-2 in that game. Now, keep in mind, Northwest Whitfield, the defending 4A state champions in Georgia High School, and then also you have the reigning AA state champions up in Division II for Baylor. So we knew this was going to be a good game.
And it delivered.
Yeah, 3-2, Northwest Whitfield prevails in that one. They trailed 1-0 early in the first half of that one. But I went on a little bit of an epilogue yesterday just talking about how good the local soccer scene has been at the high school level.
Yes.
Here, whether it be North Georgia or Chattanooga. And it's awesome when we get like big time. I love the cross border war battles like this. And we've seen it a handful of times in soccer. I want to see it more in what I would call the more prominent sports, like the more popular ones. Why can't we do this in football?
Hey, look now. Soccer is becoming pretty popular around here.
Oh, I get
that. Last time I was here, we were talking about some high school soccer and how good some of the programs in this area just are. And there's so many good soccer teams here. If we sat there and just listed how good some of these teams are, people that don't follow soccer avidly would be surprised, because this area has seen just a soccer explosion of late. There's so many good teams, and that's why we're seeing teams like the Red Wolves and the CFC having that same success, because there's a bit of a soccer mania or a fever going on through the Tennessee Valley right now.
Yeah, and that's what I was – we didn't even mention two of the teams that are in addition to Northwest Whitfield and Baylor, who were both defending state champions. Mm-hmm. We had McCauley and Dalton coming into the year. This was one of the things I had in my Big Three yesterday. Coming into the season, Dalton has retained that number one ranking through the USA Today national soccer rankings in high school, and they're still undefeated. They're 14-0. McCauley was ranked in the top five nationally coming into the year. So, I mean, it's incredible to see. It's not just one or two teams. It's a bunch of heavyweights.
It really is, and it's surprising, because you wouldn't think that the Tennessee Valley as some sort of prominent soccer area when you just say, you know, where are the best soccer teams at? But there are so many good ones just right here. And it's surprising.
Yeah, moving on to number two here. Some more, we'll call it bad news for Mox basketball.
Yes, bad news.
Lamont Parrish is losing his third player since the end of the season. Donovan Totley is leaving the team. He confirmed, Coach Parrish did, to the Times Free Press yesterday afternoon. Donovan Totley was a freshman this year, and the quote that he gave to the newspaper was, Donovan will no longer be with the team. Quote, I like the kid and wish him the best, and he will get another chance to make better decisions. He just needs to continue to mature. Now, context to that, Totley was suspended indefinitely at the end of the year, missing the Southern Conference tournament, as well as, I believe, the last regular season game. It was his second suspension of the year. Maybe this was maybe Parrish was okay with him going.
I'm sure he was, but this being the third departure and you losing three of your top four scorers from last year, you've now lost Kevin Easley. Jerry Johnson Jr. is still looking for a transfer, and now you're losing Toltley. At some point, you have to find a way to start retaining players so you can build a program.
No, I mean, it's going to look like, I mean, this year was basically a brand new roster again after his first year.
Right, and that's the thing, because everybody said, okay, well, we can sit here and we'll watch these guys grow, and in a couple of years, this will be a team to be reckoned with. And now he's losing some of these guys that we were expecting to be building blocks. Now, keep in mind, all three of these players that he's lost at the end of the season are for three different reasons. One guy just wanted to leave. Another is a graduate transfer. This guy, quite possibly, he wanted gone. But it's tough. You have to find a way to keep these players that you bring in on the roster so that way you can develop them. So that way maybe they do become juniors and seniors and you can say, okay, we can make a run at a SoCon title. We don't constantly want to be bringing in freshmen to play large roles and rebuilding.
No, you're absolutely right. And you are correct in the fact that it is for three different reasons that each of these guys left in Kevin Easley and Jerry Johnson Jr. and now Donovan Toltley. But one thing's for certain, it's production loss. They were three of the top four scorers on the team, especially with Jerry Johnson and Kevin Easley. They were the top two scorers on the team. And, I mean, losing the Southern Conference Freshman of the Year, a guy who averaged over 13 points a game,
huge.
That's the one that hurts the most out of this. And, you know, we've known this for a couple of weeks now, but it's just adding insult to injury when you talk about a couple of other guys who were at least productive, especially a guy who's a grad transfer who could be, you know, one of those senior leaders on your team.
When you lose three of your top four scorers from one year, it is so tough to be successful the next season because those were the guys that were putting points in the bucket. Whether or not they were seniors and graduated or you lose them in this manner, it doesn't matter because now you're going back to scratch almost because you have to find a way to replace that production. So it's just tough. It's going to be a season that will definitely be another probably building block unless they find some way to get some transfers in. I'm interested to see what Coach Paris will be able to do because the one thing that he did do is he can recruit, and he got all these guys here to start with. So there was something he said to them to get them to come to Chattanooga.
No, yeah, and you're right. And the thing about, he's probably as frustrated as anyone is right now because he's kind of sitting here looking at this is the now the I'm going into my third year and I'm having to replace all of my top production once again. And the team did improve this year, had a better record. They wound up finishing fifth in the regular season standings, which pretty impressive when you consider how good the Southern Conference was this year. There was a clear separation for the top four teams in the league. They were all four ranked in the top 75 in RPI. So that's the first time that's ever happened in the Southern Conference where they've had four really good teams, and then the rest of the pack was kind of just trailing behind them. And all of those other teams that were left in the conference, Chattanooga emerged as the best team among those down the course of this, down the stretch of the season. So where does he go from here? And if he continues to be several games under 500 and then having to replace a roster year after year after year with a bunch of turnover, at what point do you grow concerned as the athletic director about the future of the basketball program?
The first question I'd ask is, what do we have to do in order to retain players? Because year to year, you should not be rebuilding your roster completely unless you just had a heavy senior class. That's the first thing that you have to ask yourself. What do we have to do in order to retain players on this team? And if Coach Paris doesn't have an answer, then, you know, you got to find a way to address that. The next thing is, how can you separate yourself from just being a part of the rest? You want to be the leaders of the pack somehow, some way. What do you have to do to get there? And those are questions that obviously time will tell if Coach Paris has those answers, if those answers are within the UTC athletic department, or if it's a guy that's on the roster that will emerge as the leader to carry them where they want to go, and that's back to the NCAA tournament.
Of course.
You never want to be the rest of the pack. You want to be at least part of that top four, like you said, that separated themselves from everybody else. Well, being the best of the rest doesn't count for anything.
No, and historically, Chattanooga has been one of the better teams in the Southern Conference on the men's and women's basketball front. So I think that's something that, that they want to get back to on both sides of that.
Definitely.
Moving on to number three here as we wrap up the first segment, or moving up to number one, rather, I should say. We've done three and two already. Moving on to number one. How about this? East Hamilton and Bradley Central. I feel like I've talked a lot about their baseball teams this year, rightfully so. They are now inching closer to a big-time two-game series coming up next Monday and Tuesday. Last night, East Ham takes down McMinn County 6-1. They improved to 17-3 overall in the year, 9-0 in District 5-3A play. They are now ranked third in the state by the Tennessee Baseball Coaches Association poll. They're getting it done this year.
Yeah, clearly. When you're getting it done like that, people are going to start taking notice. And East Hamilton's definitely is. And there was a reason why you put this game down and you've been talking about them, because both of these teams are really good. And this will be a good game of baseball. If you're just a casual fan, this is one that you'd want to catch.
So in last night's action, Connor Thornburg and Will Campbell each had a pair of hits for East Hamilton. They both drove in runs, and Isaac Molds got the win, only allowing four hits over four innings. Molds improved to 4-0 on the year with the win on the mound for the Hurricanes. East Ham plays one more district game in between there. That is a home-and-home turnaround tonight as they'll make the trip back up to Athens to take on McMinn. Now for Bradley, they scrapped and clawed to a 5-3 win last night, improving to 14-6 overall, but more importantly, leaving them with a 7-1 record in district play. So they're keeping pace right there with East Hamilton, setting up next week's big showdown in that two-game series. They don't have any other district games between now and then, so we know that at least this is going to be, even if East Ham for some reason dropped the game tonight, this is going to be for first place next week.
Hey, you love to see a game that's for first place. Both teams know what's on the line, and these are two good teams, so they'll definitely show up.
Yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And I've talked about this guy a couple of times. Riley Black had another solo home run last night. I'm excited to see where this guy goes. He's only a junior. I talked about him a little bit yesterday. He had another great pitching performance over the weekend. The guy, every time I look online, is making headlines. He's pitched 2-1 hitters in the last 2 weeks. He's hit a handful of home runs, and he's also hit for the cycle in one game.
Whew. It helps when you have a guy like that on your roster, doesn't it?
Yeah, no kidding.
I guarantee you some college programs are sitting there looking at him already. They're going to be making some offers soon.
Absolutely. All right, that's it for the three big things. When we come back, going to take a look around at some of the other scores from around the area last night and look ahead at what's coming up tonight here on a Wednesday. Stay tuned. This is The Local Zone, ESPN 105 on The Zone, ESPNChattanooga.com. Welcome back into The Local Zone, ESPN 105 on The Zone, ESPNChattanooga.com. About 19 minutes after the hour here on a Wednesday afternoon in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I am Brooks Carter, host of the show. Find me on Twitter at Brooks A. Carter, the show account at Local Zone 105.1, and my guest host every Wednesday, Jamal Williams at J. Williams, WDEF. Taking a look at some of the games coming up tonight. We'll do that here in just a second. But at first, let's go ahead and start looking around at some of these SEC headlines and stories as we approach quickly the spring games. They're coming up this week.
Oh, they're here. It's here. The orange-white game is right around the corner. Spring football is full steam ahead, and this is your last taste of football until fall. So, you know, you better savor it.
Yeah, so some of the things that I think looking at our teams here more locally with Tennessee, obviously the big one, Georgia and Alabama as well. Starting with Tennessee, in your opinion, what do you think is the biggest story for the Vols this spring practice, and what do you think is going to be the most intriguing thing that the fans want to see coming up in the orange and white spring game?
Well, obviously, I think quarterback is your most prominent position, and Coach Pruitt has talked a lot about the progression and the things he's seen about Jarrett Garantano so far during spring ball. So what I want to see during the spring game is, does he look that much improved, and how good is he going to play this coming season? Because if he's improved, then the idea behind that is that the offense will be improved. And if the offense is improved, all of a sudden you're scoring points. That wins games. It's a trickle-down effect when it comes to quarterbacks. So that's what I want to see. Coach Pruitt has been singing Jarrett's praises all camp long. And he's talked about how the offense has looked good at times, even, you know, whipping the defense on some days. So I want to see if that offense is going to be much improved. So those are some of the things. That's the main thing that I want to see from the spring game for the Vols.
Yeah, and for me, when you start looking at it, obviously in any sort of spring game setting, a controlled scrimmage, they're not going to be able to get their hands on the quarterback, the defense. So I want to see from the quarterback perspective how well Jarrett's able to throw the ball downfield with what I would consider the receivers are to me the most obvious strength on this offense when you have Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway coming back as upperclassmen once again and some young guys trickled in there who they are expecting to step up and make some plays again this year. So I want to see how well he can throw the ball downfield because we saw it last year when he was given time, which he inevitably will be in the spring game because, as I mentioned, they can't touch the quarterback really. I want to see how well he throws the ball downfield because, you go back to that Auburn game last year, he was throwing some dimes downfield.
He clearly has talent. There's no arguing whether or not he has talent. The question is whether or not the offensive line is going to give him time, but we want to see that talent consistently, even when the pocket does break down, because he's athletic enough to move around and make some plays with his legs. So I need to see this on a more consistent basis because with him, I always felt like I was guessing on what I'd get from him. One week, he looked good, and you were like, all right, there's some potential here. It could work. And then another week, he looked like a deer in headlights, like he'd never seen a pass rush before.
Well, and part of that has to do with how poor the offensive line played last year. And so I want to see them, how well they're going to be able to run block in this game. And from the running back perspective, I want to see we're going to get a look at several different guys at the running back position. I know Tim Jordan will probably get a lot of the carries in this game because Filsimi's out with an injury. They announced yesterday that he had surgery last week and will be out for the remainder of spring practice. So we're going to get to see a lot of these young running backs involved in the spring game next week. But this offense goes as the offensive line goes, and that's right. They were dreadful last year.
And I think we'll see it be much improved. I want to see the dividends come from Jim Chaney now that he's there, and I think they will. And I think having a guy like T. Martin in the building is going to help as well. And I think all of those things will help Jarrett Garantano continue to be better and in turn make the offense that much better. I have no doubt that there's talent at the running back stable. UT typically has a pretty good running back. As long as the offensive line is there, you have a quarterback, you've got good receivers, there's all the potential here to have a really good offense if everything comes together just right. And we know Jim Chaney was highly sought after as an offensive coordinator, and there's a reason why Tennessee paid to get him. He's going to hopefully put his effect and put his touches on this offense, and we'll see a more consistent and more potent offense this season.
Looking at Georgia now, and moving on to Georgia here. Actually, let's go ahead and take a call. I think we got somebody on the Vols here. You're on the air. Who am I talking with?
Hello, this is TC.
Hey, TC, what's going on, man?
Well, I just found your show, guys. How long have you all been doing the local zone?
Since last Monday, we're taking over the last hour of the Stephen A. Smith Show.
Hot dog. Well, that's good to know. good to know. Yeah, I'm just sitting waiting on my wife in the grocery store, and I just finished doing some reading, and I flipped on the radio, and here you guys are. That's great because I'm a big Press Row fan, and since I've retired, got to listen more to Weston Womp on Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
Just a quick comment. I was listening to your comments about UT. I think one of the best moves that Jeremy Pruitt made early on was signing the strength and conditioning coach to a three-year contract, because that's where we're going to see just what Garantano can do if he is able to work behind a stronger, consistent offensive line. Last year, you couldn't gauge anything because there were too many lookout blocks on that offensive line.
Yeah, no kidding on that one.
But, you know, because obviously that was the thing that the previous administration, Lyle, as it were. Whatever happened to Lyle, by the way?
I think he's still down as an intern.
Is he still down there? Is it?
I haven't seen any news otherwise. I think he's still he was at Alabama's pro day just a couple of weeks ago. So he's still down in Tuscaloosa.
Well, hope the boy learned something. You never know. But I think that's going to be one of the, that to me was the most encouraging thing about Pruitt early on. But I saw him do that because undoubtedly those guys, you know, and he had to work with what he inherited. But let's face it. So all of the coaching additions he's made have been solid. And I think we'll see some benefit in that, particularly, again, one, strength and conditioning, two, Jim Chaney, T. Martin, and, you know, he's got good skills, people. You know, running backs, receivers, he just needs time. He just needs time. All the ingredients are there. Hopefully the talent level will get coached up and the schedule is working out for him. So I've been watching this program for a long time, guys. I'm an old fart ball. I go back to the late 50s. So I've stuck with them through thick and thin.
All right,
enjoy the show, guys. We'll be listening to you.
Thanks, TC. Thanks for the call. And quickly before we go to another call here, I think he had a great point about the strength and conditioning side of things, because when you get a good guy in place,
yep.
You think about how the rules are set up with the NCAA. That's the guy that's actually with the team more over the course of the summer than the actual head coach is.
Yeah, and the one thing that you want to look at is the Vols have had injury problems toward the end of Butch Jones's tenure,
yeah,
going into last season, and a good strength and conditioning coach can help rid you of those problems because he'll get those guys prepared and make sure you don't get a lot of those soft tissue injuries that keep flaring up over the course of a season.
All right, let's go back to the hotline now. Who are we talking with?
Well, this is Tanner. Hey, how are you doing?
How you doing, Tanner? What do you want to talk about, man?
Hey, man, have y'all heard anything on J.J. Peterson? You know, I know he had a red shirt last year, and I just haven't really heard much from Pruitt or anybody else about his progress or anything.
I have not. It seems he said he made I know he was practicing with the team, obviously, last year, but I haven't seen anything too much on him. I'm looking through the news headlines here for anything recent coming out in the last few weeks.
There hasn't been a whole lot on him, and that's right. Not to say that he hasn't been doing great things in practice. Coach Pruitt just hasn't talked a whole lot about him so far this spring camp, so you take that as you will. He doesn't want to put everything out there, and you know, maybe he just hasn't necessarily come across the way Pruitt would hope. But that doesn't mean that he's not doing good things.
All right, Tanner, to answer your question here, he did have the only quote I've seen about J.J. so far from Pruitt in spring practice is he has been a full participant in practice. And a couple of weeks back, Pruitt said that he's a guy that just got here in September, and he's had to really be on the catch-up for things, and he is not in full contact yet because of his shoulder. So he's been participating every day in practice, but it's not in full contact yet.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So real quickly, though, before moving on from the Vols, I did want to touch on Georgia, because to me, this is one of the more interesting years coming in for Georgia, because everyone has hyped Kirby up and heralded Kirby as one of these top 5-6 coaches in college football because of how much success he's had, especially the last 2 years. Won an SEC championship, made it to a national championship game, and got back to the SEC championship last year, and was inevitably a late second-half collapse away from being back in the playoff once again. But, and this has been brought up a couple of times, when you compare the first 3 years of Kirby Smart to the first 3 years of Mark Richt at Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
These are the records. Kirby Smart, 32-10, two SEC East titles, one SEC title overall, and a New Year's Six bowl win. that was also in the playoff. If you compare that to Mark Richt, 32-8 in his first three seasons, two SEC East titles, a conference championship, and a BCS bowl win. So if the playoff would have been around, Georgia would have made the playoff. It's almost identical.
It is, and, you know, that's surprising to say the least, and time will tell whether or not Kirby's going to separate himself from Mark Richt. But Mark Richt had some successes. He just couldn't get UGA over the hump.
No, he couldn't. And his first 4 years, they thought he was going to, because year four, you know, I just talked about the first 3 years. Year four, Richt actually won the SEC again in 2005 with DJ Shockley.
And the question is whether or not Kirby can get you over the hump. And all things right now point and give you hope that the answer will be yes one day. Whether this year is the year, yeah, it's yet to see. Right now, the one thing that he's consistently been saying from spring ball is that that defensive line doesn't have the depth that they once had. He's, quote, called it thin. So that's going to be something that, especially in the SEC, where having defensive linemen matters, smash-mouth SEC football, that's definitely going to be something to watch during the season, because if those – he could be saying that to motivate some of those guys that are on the bench that are going to just be role players for him, or he could be 100% serious that they're thin on the defensive line. That's going to be the question, because late in the season, if you're thin on the defensive line, that's all of a sudden when you've got an injury or two and we're looking at a run defense that's going to be leaky.
How much of a threat in a division that Georgia has – seemingly ran through the last 2 years right into Atlanta. You know, they've had the East wrapped up after the first week in November last year and had it wrapped up with 2 weeks left in the regular season the year before that. So, I mean, they've clinched it super early the last 2 years. How much of a threat do you think the Dan Mullen-led Florida Gators pose in year two, a team that finished incredibly hot, 10-3 in just year one under Dan Mullen, with a big-time blowout win and a New Year's Six Bowl over Michigan?
I think it's a huge threat. Honestly, if you ask me who some of the best coaches in the SEC are, one of the names that will come out of my mouth is Dan Mullen. After Nick Saban, I could make a pretty solid argument that he's your second-best coach in the SEC.
No, I totally agree with that.
So when you say he's the second-best coach possibly in the SEC, a conference that has some big name coaches, including guys like Jimbo Fisher hanging around, that says a lot. And Florida isn't exactly a slouch. They looked good at times last year. They just dropped a couple of games at the wrong times and lost a couple of close ones. If I was Kirby, I'd be a little worried. And I think the rest of the SEC is going to be a little bit on notice, because that bowl game, they looked good. The question is, can they carry it over into the season? Sure. But that's the same question that we're asking for every SEC team
exactly.
Right now, you know?
It's the golden question. If we knew that, if I knew that, I'd be in Vegas.
Put all the money down right now.
I'd be a betting man, for sure. I'd be rich. All right, when we come back, going to jump into our segment known as Halftime Happenings, where we take a break away from the sports headlines and jump into some goofy stuff. Stay tuned. This is the Local Zone, ESPN 105 on the Zone, ESPNChattanooga.com. Welcome back into the Local Zone, ESPN 105 on the Zone. Brooks Carter, host of the show, here with you each weekday from 2 to 3 p.m. And my guest host every Wednesday, Jamal Williams, in with us. And quickly, we did not go through the actual spring game schedule, so we will do that real quick before we jump into our halftime happenings here.
It's a busy weekend for spring football. A lot of games this weekend.
Yes. So coming up with the spring game Saturday, this Saturday we've got Alabama in action. That'll be on ESPN2. Arkansas is actually this past Saturday. Auburn's is this Saturday. That's on the SEC Network. Florida's is this Saturday, also on the SEC Network. Georgia's is coming up 2 weeks from this Saturday on April 20th. That'll be at 2 p.m. on the SEC Network. Kentucky's is actually on a Friday night, which I think that's kind of cool when they do that on a Friday night. Vanderbilt's done that a couple of times in the last few years.
Hey, stand out from the crowd. Do it on a Friday.
Yeah, so that's 6 p.m. coming up on the SEC Network this Friday. LSU actually just had theirs this past Saturday. Mississippi State's is this Saturday, as well as Mizzou's. Ole Miss completed their spring drills this past Saturday, as well as South Carolina. And then a primetime or late night for what is a spring game for the viewing schedule. 6 p.m. coming up this Saturday, the orange and white spring game. So that'll have the Vols in that one. And Texas A&M will also be this Saturday as well. So there you go.
I want to see if they'll have a good turnout for the orange and white game.
I think they should. I think they will. And it's funny. To me, this is one of the weird, rare times where the coaching staff hires have made more headlines and brought more enthusiasm into a program than actually any of like the players or the recruits or anything like that.
It's true. I think keeping Rick Barnes is the biggest headline to come out of Knoxville for a little while now.
Well, I mean, on the football front, when you bring in Jim Chaney, yeah. And then also bringing T. Martin home.
Oh, yeah. Bringing T. Martin back is huge.
All right. Let's go ahead and get into it. Here is this week's Halftime Happenings.
Who's in the news?
Check your panties. About 175,000 rice. I think that was supposed to be pantries.
What's the new millennial trend?
Teenagers challenging each other to eat laundry detergent pods.
What video is going viral?
He's climbing in your windows. He's snatching your people up to hide your kids, hide your wife.
It's time for your Halftime Happenings with Brooks and Jamal.
Okay, we start this week in Halftime Happenings with a story that I know Jamal and his crew over on the morning news at Channel 12 touched on earlier this week.
Oh, we did,
A record-sized female python captured in the Everglades down in Florida. And, I mean, this thing took five people to hold it up. This is a scary size. I mean, this is – I don't even know how this is even allowed to be a snake be this big.
17 feet, 140 pounds. Let me tell you, I'm not afraid of snakes, but if I see a 17-foot snake over there, you're going to see how fast I can run. It's not happening. It's not happening.
I mean, because we've seen pictures of alligators that are like 20, you know, excess of like 20 feet or whatever, and those things look like dinosaurs. I mean, this thing is almost that long, and the fact that it weighed as much as it did, man, that is just, that's freaky big.
And the area it's living in, it's encountered an alligator or two. That is a big snake. You got five people having to hold it, 140 pounds. That's bigger than some adults.
In a statement from the Big Cypress National Preserve where this was found in the Everglades, they said, quote, "She is the largest python ever removed from the National Preserve, and she was caught because of research and a new approach to finding pythons."
I just hope that new approach doesn't lead them to finding any more that size, because I really hope there are no more that size just hanging around.
Researchers apparently use male pythons wearing radio transmitters to find breeding grounds. Once females are located, they are removed with the idea of controlling the invasive species. The thing about this, too, is it's like pythons aren't even native to the United States.
No, but they've exploded in Florida. And it's an invasive species, and they've just taken over. There's so many of them there. That's why they're having to do these control things. And when you've got a 17-foot snake just rolling around, there's not much that's going to get in its way out there. Maybe an alligator or two, but it's bigger than so many alligators they have.
Once again, though, 17 feet, almost 140 pounds, and I did fail to include this part. It contained 73 developing eggs.
I don't want that DNA passed around. Let me tell you, if you want to see how fast I can run, put a 17-foot snake behind me.
With 73 babies inside of it, maybe.
Gone.
I'm
out of there. I check out. That's done.
No, because I agree with you. I'm not generally like fearful of snakes, but if I see anything in the wild that's that big,
There's no stand there and see what it is. Nope, gone.
Well, because, I mean, I don't feel like animals, I don't feel like snakes should ever weigh more than human. That outweighs my wife by 20 pounds.
See, that snake is huge. I've held snakes. I worked at a nature center and worked with snakes. I've pet snakes. I've been around all kinds of snakes. I've held alligators. I've held alligator snapping turtles. I've never held anything that big, and let me tell you, I don't want to. I don't want to be around it. I don't want to see it. If I see it, it needs to be from a distance.
All right, Jamal, here is my little surprise for the week. What are your thoughts on this song capturing the internet?
Oh, man, this is your surprise. Okay. Look, I'm with it. I like it.
You do?
I do like it. Look, let me tell you, because I'm a big proponent. I like that Billy Ray Cyrus got on the remix. I do like that. I appreciate him.
All right, so is this country or rap?
I called it, it's a little bit of both. At one point, Billboard had it on the country chart.
They took it off.
But then they took it off, and I don't understand. I think it needs to stay. I think it belongs. I think it's a little bit of both.
No, I agree with you that it was funny because it's like Lil Nas X, who is the artist of this song, brought in, as Jamal just mentioned, Billy Ray for a remix.
Yeah, I think Billy Ray Cyrus gave it the cosign to say this is country.
Well, they took the original version off when it didn't have Billy Ray, and it's kind of like Lil Nas just kind of gave the bird finger to the Billboard country charts.
That's
and was
exactly.
Like, you don't think this is country?
Billy Ray Cyrus came in with the cosign. I'm telling you, that's what that is. Put me back on the country charts.
I just put a little achy breaky heart in it. Put it on the country charts.
I'm telling you, I like it. When I first heard the first song was just an earworm. It gets stuck in your head so easy. And then when Billy Ray Cyrus came on the remix, I was right there with you. I was like, see, that's the cosign. He just wanted to get back on those country charts. He's trying to be a country artist.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, undoubtedly.
Look, now, we have this argument at this news station all the time because we have some purist country music fans at the station, and then we have a couple that like the newer age, more poppy country music. So I think this fits right in with the poppy stuff. It's not pure country music by no means, but neither is a lot of the new country stuff that comes out.
If Sam Hunt is allowed to stay on country music radio charts, he raps in his songs. I mean, and then you had Jason Aldean rapping in the Dirt Road Anthem song a couple years ago. They've already stretched the genre so far out that why not include this?
Exactly. I mean, the content of the song does seem like it makes sense. And the music behind it, the instrumental, fits as well. So I don't see why it wouldn't be a country song.
I agree with you. All right. With that in mind, that is it for Halftime Happenings this week. We'll be back to wrap up the show after this. Stay tuned. It's the Local Zone, ESPN 105.1 The Zone. Welcome back into the Local Zone. About 8 minutes left in the show here before the top of the hour. We'll toss it off to David and Jay on Press Row as they take you home from 3 to 6, as they do each weekday here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. I am Brooks Carter, host of the show. Follow me on Twitter at Brooks A. Carter and the show account at Local Zone 105.1. And my guest host, Jamal Williams, at Jay Williams, WDEF. Had a lot of fun on today's show, and we're going to continue to have a little bit of fun here as we wrap it up, looking at some of the scores from around the area last night, as well as looking ahead to tonight. And if you want to chime in the last few minutes of the show, you can give us a call at 648-1051. Last night, looking around some of the action for a Tuesday night, a lot of the schools were had their games postponed from Monday as a result of that heavy, heavy rain.
Yeah, that rain Monday was nothing to play with.
So looking through the baseball scores from around the area, Christian Heritage falls 12-1 to Mount Perrin. That is a private school down out of the Atlanta area. Northwest Whitfield picks up a big region win against Pickens. They are both sitting 1-2 in Region 6-4A in baseball right now. Dade County over Model 5-2. Signal Mountain taking down Red Bank 11-0, run ruling them there. Ridgeland over Murray County 7-0. Calhoun, who continues their great baseball tradition, they are just behind Ringgold, nipping at their heels, trying to get up to the top of the Region 6-3A rankings. They beat LFO 12-0 last night, run ruling them. Gilmer beats Southeast Whitfield. Ringgold continues this, and I don't know if you've seen this story or not. Ringgold has not lost a region game in over two seasons.
Really?
They now increased their win streak to 35 consecutive wins in region play.
That's an impressive win streak right there. No, I didn't know it had been going that long.
Yeah, and they improved to 20-4 on the year with that win last night. So Ringgold, Baylor is undoubtedly the best baseball team in the area. I don't think that's even a debate when you look at their lineup, and they've got four or five guys already committed to play baseball at the next level, three Division I guys, and then they've got a couple of sophomores who are projected to possibly be taken in the top five rounds.
Yeah, I'd say they're easily the best team in the area. It's hard to make any other argument. It's real tough.
But I would be interested to see behind them who it would be, Ringgold or maybe East Hamilton.
Yeah.
Ringgold ranked in the top three down in Georgia high school. And as we touched on back at the beginning of the show, East Hamilton ranked third in the most recent Tennessee High School Baseball Association poll. They won 6-1 last night, as we touched on back at the beginning of the show. Cahola Creek 11-3 over Sonorville. And then finally, Grundy County over Marion County 6-0. Some more games coming up tonight from the baseball side of things. We've got Notre Dame in action with Grace Baptist. Game two of that Northwest Whitfield Pickens series gets going at 5:30 tonight. Gordon Lee and Mount Zion. Gordon Lee, if you're not familiar with them, down over in that Walker County, rural area of Walker County, they have been an outstanding baseball team for years and years and years and years. They're 18-4 on the year. They get going at 5:30 with Mount Zion tonight. Some more games from around North Georgia. Doubleheader, in fact, for Notre Dame and Grace Baptist. Chattanooga Central and Eastridge get going at 5 p.m. Brainerd and Tyner at 5 p.m. Polk County and Walker Valley, they're also at 5 p.m. Meigs County at McMinn Central. Marion County and Grundy play once again tonight as they conclude their little series that they've had going on. And then wrapping up the night, we also have another doubleheader from McMinn in Meigs County. So a lot of action tonight. Most of the time we don't have a lot of Wednesday night action, but with all the games getting postponed from Monday, should be a lot of good baseball action tonight on a Wednesday. So,
well, you know, Monday might have been bad weather, but now it's perfect weather and smooth sailing. Today is a pretty good day. It's a little warm, but it's good weather and it's a pretty day outside, so it's a good day for some baseball.
Let's go back and revisit real quickly here. There's just a handful of minutes left in the show. We were going kind of through the spring practice here with spring practice storylines and stuff and what we were most looking forward to with a lot of these spring games coming up. We touched on Tennessee. We touched on Georgia. Let's touch on Alabama just a little bit here. What do you think this team – what do you think spring practice has been like for this team after their absolute – butt-kicking in the national championship game?
I wouldn't want to be in a Nick Saban spring practice after that. But it's also probably night and day from last year because, as you were saying, with Tennessee, they were making headlines for all the coaches they were at, and Alabama was making headlines for all the coaches they were losing. So it's probably night and day from what it was last year.
I agree with that. And that's one of the we were talking about the coaching staff additions that everyone with the Tennessee fan base is excited about. There's been even more turnover with the Alabama coaching staff, and this kind of seems more like a better fit for what Saban probably wants in his coaching staff from everything that I've kind of read and seen and gotten a feel for on social media. If you look at the way that Saban kind of talked about this coaching staff and last year's coaching staff and the way that all these guys left, you had Dan Enos leaving in the middle of the night, leaving nothing. Did you ever see that story? He
Yes.
literally left in the middle of the night to take the offensive coordinator job and left nothing in his office, but a pencil on his desk.
Just a pencil.
I don't know if that was like a predetermined move.
When you're ready to go, you're ready to go, and you just leave the pencil to say you were there. Or maybe they gave him a pencil when they hired him.
they brought back Sousan Siri to coach linebackers. Definitely a much better fit as a positional coach than a coordinator we've seen from that awful one-year stint on Rocky Top at the end of the Derek Dooley era. But I think offensively, this is going to be a really fun group to look at this year because I think Tua – is going to be as comfortable as ever in this offense, knowing that there's no competition.
No, there's not even a little bit of competition for him. But even after the year he had last year, who could have really provided him any competition? He set the bar so high for himself. Let's be serious. Nick Saban didn't need competition for him. We knew he was the starter.
No, and I mean it's going to be a ton of fun to look at. I mean, the receivers they've got coming back, the quarterbacks, they got – you're expecting Najee Harris to step up this year at the running back position.
We know Alabama always reloads. They're losing a lot of guys to the draft in the NFL, but they reload better than any other team in the country.
Jamal, thanks for coming in, man.
Hey, anytime.
Every Wednesday, Jamal will be here. Follow him on Twitter at JWilliamsWDEF. Follow me on Twitter at Brooks A. Carter and the show account at Locals on 105.1. Press Row coming up next. Stay tuned.